Welcome to the Brave Little Podcast, coming from Dallas, Texas, Los Angeles, and Sacramento, California. Here's Skylar Teo, Aaron Alvarado, and David Stauffer.
Welcome to the Brave Little Podcast, all the way from the Los Angeles Lonzos.
We're big ballers, baby. We're big ballers.
This episode is brought to you by the Big Baller brand. How excited are you to have brand new shiny point guard?
I just bought a $750 pair of sneakers. So I am officially a big baller. I'm changing my name to Lonzo.
Well, why not?
I'm so hyped right now.
Well, are you more excited for Lonzo or LeVar?
Oh man, I look at them as like a package. They're like the directors of 21 Jump Street. They come as a package.
Oh,
I wouldn't fire either of them. Right, yeah, I wouldn't fire either of those guys.
Oh gosh, that's a little too soon. It still hurts. Too bad. I'm in a lot of pain, but I'm not in a lot of pain as a Kings fan, which is, I'm used to feeling pain as a Kings fan, but I am not because the Kings won the draft, and I am so ecstatic. I can never actually utter that phrase ever. Like, I've never could. The Kings won the draft. It's not my words. Those are the words of the New York Times, The Ringer, the USA Today, Zach Lowe of ESPN. And so,
hold on. Not the words of Bill Simmons, though.
Not the words of Bill Simmons, who is the self-proclaimed, I don't watch college basketball, but watch me do an entire one-hour podcast about who's good and who's not. He's so obsessed with Malik Monk because he watched one basketball game. One game where Malik Monk scored a lot of points. Congratulations. Also, he's not as good as Buddy Hield.
Also, he loves the TV show Monk.
So, Tony Shalhoub. Yeah. Tony actor.
He's a Shalhoub head.
Oh, Bill Simmons. I'm a big fan of his. I listen to his stuff, whatever. He was so wrong. And what was funny was it was his instant reaction. And he repeats things a lot, and he gets his mind stuck on something. And that thing for him is the Kings are terrible or whatever. And in his mind, it's like Vlade Divac doesn't know anything, and he's the only one making these calls. And he doesn't realize we hired Scott Perry, this huge kind of influential front office executive who has had a great track record. He's the one who drafted Durant out of OKC. And so... you know, Bill doesn't know these things. He's not considering these things. To him, it's just a dysfunctional franchise and they can do no good. And so he's just trying to, whatever they do, it's bad. And he's trying to find a way to describe that. But it's like, he didn't even wait to see what the reactions were across all major publications, which have been overwhelmingly positive. I mean, A+ grade. And that's because they turned the number 10 pick into 15 and 20 in a deep draft. Yet he insisted there was a legit 10, like this were a 10 person draft. Like, Malik Monk for us would have sat on the bench because Malik Monk is not as good as Buddy Hield. And I'm not saying that as a homer. I'm saying look at their stats in college. Definitely a better college career for Buddy Hield. And Buddy Hield, second half of the season when he got traded to the Kings, he actually put up pretty good numbers. Yeah. And so, like, if you're comparing those two players right now, Buddy Hield is clearly the better player. So why would he waste a 10 pick on a bench shooting guard, another shooter on our roster, when we could turn that into 15 and 20? And take a shot on people like Harry Giles, which is high risk, high reward. And if you're a small market like Sacramento, you have to take those risks if you want to break through. I mean, it was brilliant. I really was so happy with the draft.
Right. But, I got to admit, you guys did well. But I look to, I don't look to Bill Simmons. I think he's biased. What I look to is the latest roster update to NBA 2K17.
Ooh.
Where Monk is rated 79 and Buddy Hield is 78.
No, it's not. Is that really? Oh, no.
No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, gosh. You're killing me. I was like, how did 2K already have their stats?
No, what's great about 2K is you can actually do custom rosters and then upload them, and then people can download them,
2K's
too.
Great.
So, it's
great.
Amazing. Super fun game.
I'll say, I don't remember the last time that the city of Sacramento, in terms of the whole Sacramento Kings fan base, was so unanimously wanting just one player at that 5 pick, and it was always De'Aaron Fox. People were praying it wasn't going to be Jason Tatum or Josh Jackson. Like, we did not want those people. We wanted De'Aaron Fox. Part of that is his style of play is exactly what we need.
Right.
He is an aggressive, super fast, total gamer point guard. We just haven't had a good point guard since Mike Bibby. I mean, Isaiah Thomas doesn't totally count because we let him go too early. And so De'Aaron Fox, when he declared for the NBA draft, when people asked him where he wanted to go, he said Sacramento. We're also not used to hearing players say Sacramento as the first, you know, the top of their list. But for him, it's because he knew he would play immediately, and his style of play fit our roster and what we're trying to do. And so for him, it was like, oh, I can get instant minutes. And he will. And his jersey is going to be seen all over the city. There's all these videos of all these different bars and areas in Sacramento, these draft parties, of people just going nuts when Phoenix took Jackson at number four. So, I mean, there was just an eruption of celebration. That was the earthquake that Beemore fell, actually, on Thursday. Anyway, I'm thrilled. I'm really excited. But there's an angle I hadn't considered until De'Aaron Fox brought it up. But the rivalry he had with Alonzo in college, a rivalry that De'Aaron admittedly won soundly, is can now continue in the NBA with Lonzo, the Lakers. We've been crappy for a long time. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Kings longer than the Lakers, but we've both been recently crappy. I'm hoping that their personal rivalry can amp up the actual franchise rivalry.
Well, you know, you talk about them, or you talk about De'Aaron Fox winning the college matchup, but now that Lonzo is on the Lakers, he's not being weighed down by four slow white guys. So, I think this...
Four slow white guys?
Yeah, I believe that's what his dad said is the reason they lost to Kentucky.
Oh, that's right.
Because the slow white guys.
That's right.
So, yeah, now that he's on the Lakers, he's got some... No, I think it's going to be actually really a fun matchup between the two. Because, like you said, both teams have struggled for a number of years.
Yeah.
They've both been in the rebuild process for a while. I happen to think that we're in a better situation than you guys are up north, but we'll see how it plays out. I like this group that we have now. I mean, I'd love to add someone like Paul George, but we'll see what it takes to bring someone on like him. But even you know, with the roster that we have now, if they decide to not go after anyone in free agency, which I think is would be a mistake. Because we need a starting shooting guard. But even if they roll with the five that they have now, it's okay. Like, it's not bad because they're young and they can all grow. So
the D'Angelo Russell thing still doesn't make sense to me. I don't actually get that at all.
It does make sense when you realize that Magic flat out said that now we have space for two max contracts. So
I guess it remains to be seen whether or not they're able to deliver on that part of the promise.
So it does, but you don't make a move like that unless you have some pretty hard information, some facts, if you will.
You know, Paul George has said he wants to go to the Lakers after next season.
That's fine. That's what I mean. Like, we don't even, so next season isn't really even a concern for us because we don't have our number one pick.
Right.
So it doesn't even really matter. Like, next season is all about growth. If we can get Paul George on before, you know, the start of the season, that's great. That would be awesome. But next season is all about developing the talent that we have, which is Ingram and Ball and Larry Nance Jr. And then also the other thing is we want to maximize Brooke Lopez because he's an expiring contract and someone is going to pay a lot to get him at near the trade deadline next year. So if we can keep him healthy and we can feed him the ball a ton, pump those stats a little bit, then hopefully we can get a decent return for him. So,
interesting on the Brook Lopez angle. That would be interesting to see how that shakes out. Yeah, I mean, I definitely don't think the Lakers are in a better position than the Kings right now.
Well, they are.
But
we have the better players, first of all.
But that's the thing. It's like they don't have the better players, the Lakers don't. But they do have the promise of free agent potential that the Kings don't have. Like, Paul George could very well end up there, and it seems like that's what he wants to do after next season. You know, like, the Kings don't have those. I mean, the people from Sacramento that want to come back are Ryan Anderson on the Houston Rockets, who I have good knowledge wants to come back to Sacramento at some point, but he's not a Paul George. Although it would be really nice to get Ryan back. And then Matt Barnes, we just had, just won a championship in Golden State.
No, but isn't there a warrant out? I think there's a warrant out for his arrest in Sacramento. So it's probably best if he doesn't come back.
Meta World Peace actually has more warrants than Matt Barnes does from his time here. for us in Sacramento, it was the second half of last season, which granted was throwaway after we traded DeMarcus Cousins, but it was the improvement we saw in our young rookies, namely Scal, Labissiere, and then Buddy Hield, was really, really encouraging. If they continue at that rate of growth and progress that they did at the second half of last season, like, those are exciting players. And Willie Cauley-Stein, I should throw in there too. With DeMarcus Cousins being out of there, the one big benefit is that those guys could get minutes and we can really find out if they're good. And they're showing promise. We don't know, you know, how high that ceiling is yet. We'll see. But if De'Aaron Fox can get in there, it'll be really interesting to see. Now, we have a bet in our brave little thread between you, me, and Skylar, who all have these lottery picking teams right now. But Skylar has a bet on who of our three teams will have the best record. I think he's put $1,000 on this, that the Mavs will have a better record than the Lakers and the Kings. I think that's actually just patently crazy. You think the same thing, and all of us think that our teams are going to be the ones with a better record.
Oh, yeah. So one of us is going to – two of us are going to be very disappointed.
Yeah.
And those two are you, the original Brave Little Boys. You guys are going to be severely disappointed.
Yeah. Well, I've got – the great thing about my disappointment is I got season tickets to be there for every game of it.
When's the first preseason game? Do you know?
And I don't know. They haven't released the schedule yet.
Okay.
So I don't know. I mean, usually it's like, what, end of September or October?
Is Fox going to the Summer League?
He will be. Yeah, it's funny because, like, the Summer League Kings roster is stacked because, like, our team is super young. So it's, like, actually, right. Like, a lot of our starting five is going to be at Summer League. So it's, yeah, because it'll be him, Scal, and then, you know, we've got, we drafted Jackson, Giles, and Mason, and then a bunch of other guys. I think Hield will be going back as well.
Oh, nice.
So.
Yeah, no, I like what you guys are doing up there finally. I think that it's long
overdue. Well, we both have decent coaches right now, and that helps.
Well, we have a great coach in LA, so.
And I feel pretty good about getting Memphis's coach. Like, Dave Yeager is, I think, so far so good, considering what he's had. I mean, last season.
He's no Rick Adelman, but
the
time will tell.
Years. Rick Adelman. He's considered a saint in these parts. all right. Well, there's our 12 minutes of basketball. Let's get into this. We're going to talk some Netflix. We're going to review Netflix's first big budget original film, War Machine, starring Brad Pitt, and directed by our main man, Australian filmmaker David Michaud. And then we're going to also talk about, some of our favorite Netflix original content. That's both series, documentaries, movies. And so let's launch into War Machine first. This is a big bet, $90 million bet on Netflix. That's how much they paid for it. And you've got an interesting director. You've got a good cast. You've got maybe tired subject matter in the case of it being about the war in Afghanistan, Iraq. Well, Afghanistan. This is a pseudo Stanley McChrystal character, and it's got mixed reviews from critics, 55% on Rotten Tomatoes. You and I have been talking about how excited we are to see it. I will say that Skylar, our other, the third, and hasn't been recorded a pod in like 6 months and counting, the third member of our podcast hated this movie. Really, really hated it.
Oh, yeah.
You and I both felt a little differently.
Yeah, I mean, so like you said, this was one of the movies we came into this year looking forward to as the first we heard about it. And like you said, big budget gamble by Netflix. And it's had some lukewarm reception. One of the interesting things that I've heard is that I can't remember where I read this, but somewhere along the lines, in the Pentagon itself, this movie, War Machine, is like hugely popular. So
really?
People are constantly talking about it and they constantly bring it up, which I find is really interesting to me because, you know, do they often watch war movies or movies that are based around a war setting, but for some reason it's really caught on and it struck a nerve there.
I wonder why.
I don't know. I don't know why, but apparently it's very popular there. And you know, like you said, I watched the movie. It's interesting. It's not the best war movie. It's not the best Brad Pitt movie, but it's very compelling. It is an interesting story that held my attention from start to finish. And I thought it took some bold chances. The narrative is a little unconventional at times. There's some tonal issues, I would say. It's you can say that throughout. But the character, the main character, this General McMahon, I think his name
Glenn,
is his name?
Yeah, Glenn McMahon.
Yeah, Glenn. They call him Glenn. He's a fascinating character. And I think that he's the driving force of the entire movie. So it's a character piece, like it's a character study. And so yeah. It's not really so much a war movie as it is telling the story of one man who is incredibly complicated, flawed, but principled.
Yeah.
And I think that Brad Pitt did a really good job portraying this character. We've seen some less than stellar performances out of Brad Pitt recently, but I think that this one was really strong from start to finish. And overall, I found the movie really entertaining. I thought the strongest aspect of the movie were the performances. You had a really interesting cast, like Anthony Michael Hall plays one of his right-hand men.
Yeah.
Topher Grace plays like a consultant. Really interesting little role for him.
No, he's good.
Like kind of he's like a weaselly consultant. Nails that.
Or Lakeith Stanfield.
Lakeith Stanfield plays one of the soldiers. He does a great job. Really complicated character that he plays. And you know, like that's part of the tonal issue that I would say. Like when they get into these soldiers in the battlefield, the movie completely shifts.
So, let's talk about that. That's one of the big points for me is. They were deliberate tonal choices, right? So there are there are movies that have tonal issues that that are not deliberate. Ones that they don't realize until you know in the maybe on the cutting room floor until they release it that there's you know that maybe the balance wasn't working. This one was on purpose, and that's what makes it interesting to me is that this wasn't this was a calculated move. It wasn't an unexpected mistake, right? And because there are scenes in the first half of this film that are downright hilarious. And silly and almost slapstick in a way. And a lot of it has to do with the physical performance of Brad Pitt. Every time there's a montage of him jogging, I can't help but laugh because he's got these hands.
Exactly.
And it's a really interesting and funny physical performance. And I like how committed Brad Pitt is to it, although like the way he talks makes it hard for me to totally buy in sometimes, this gravelly voice. But he's committed. And then there's this sequence towards the end of the film where you're actually in this battle sequence. And what's interesting is I think the sequence is done incredibly well. And it's one of the things that makes me, it reminds me that David Michaud is a very good director, very talented. But it also was a scene that's like, that didn't feel like it belonged in this type of movie, but that's because I'm used to tonal consistency being the standard. Now the question is that a good thing? Is that, can you make a good movie that can be kind of wild type right. of kind of comedy genre feels like almost, and then this very, very serious war moment. I don't know if they pulled it off, but it definitely made me question.
Yeah, and to that point, I thought of, while it's not exactly the same tones that they hit, I thought of a movie like Full Metal Jacket, where you start off on one tone, and then about a third of the way through the movie, it's completely switched. And you know, it's like, it's not just the tone that changes, it's location. And I think that this movie plays with that a little bit. And that's kind of one of the things that I thought of. You know, this movie is not in the realm of Full Metal Jacket.
Right.
But I feel like it was definitely inspired by.
Yeah. Back to you, also, you had a point about the complicated character of Glenn McMahon, and you know, as portrayed by Brad Pitt. I'm grateful that they didn't make me hate him. When I heard this is going to be about Stanley McChrystal, you know, there's a lot of thoughts about feelings about him. And I figured, okay, Hollywood's going to do something on Stanley McChrystal. It's certainly going to be negative. And it wasn't sympathetic necessarily, but it definitely was a little more measured in the bad and the good in the sense that he is principled. He's a man that, you know, he's not like an outright, you know, just jerk to, you know, the people he's around in terms of his platoon and whatnot. But he's also someone that thinks is delusional in some ways. And there's this scene that's one of my favorite scenes, and it's got Tilda Swinton in it, who is this German who's at, you know, in this talking to the joint allied you know, people that represent the different countries are part of the joint allied troops. And I forgot what she, if she was a politician or not. She wasn't a reporter, but she questioned some things, and she essentially boils down to the psychology of this, of a man who wants a storybook ending to his military career, and mm-hmm. you're not going to get that here in the Middle East. And she succinctly put together how I felt about him in terms of, like, she says she doesn't doubt his intentions are good, you know, and that she thinks he's a very good man, but that he's delusional to think that this is the place he can win. And I think that they did a good job of making his character that way.
Right. So he's an ideologue. He believes completely in his mission and his training. And he believes in the stance that the United States is wholly good, completely and utterly. And he believes that whatever they set their mind to do, the military, that is, they're going to accomplish it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that to be a general like that, to be a multiple star general, you have to be an ideologue to an extent.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, it makes sense. And this movie just gives us a peek into his mind. So, yeah, I mean, that's what the goal was. And I think that they accomplished that for sure. You do understand his perspective better.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's on Netflix, which means everyone listening to this certainly has access. And that's the good news. You can watch it right now. And you don't have to pay for a $10 movie ticket. And so if you've heard mixed things and you've been avoiding it because of that, ultimately my recommendation is definitely give this movie a shot. I think it's absolutely entertaining, absolutely worth watching. It's not my favorite movie of the year necessarily, but it's definitely worth the runtime.
Oh, yeah. For the platform of Netflix, this is incredibly watchable.
Oh, yeah.
They did a great job, and I hope that they take more chances like this. So,
me too.
Good on them.
We've got a couple other big purchases for Netflix original movies as they're getting into it. One, there's a Will Smith movie that was very expensive, even more expensive than War Machine, coming out at the end of the year. And then we have The Irishman, a Scorsese film. And so it'll be interesting to see them take these types of chances. But I thought this was a risk that paid off. The interesting thing about Netflix is I don't know how many people watched it. They don't release their viewership numbers, mm-hmm. so it's impossible to know. But I had mentioned to you, you know, before we started recording that I'd gotten my hair cut last week. I was in Utah for work. And, the woman cutting my hair, we were talking about movies, and she brought it up to me. She asked if I had seen War Machine. And she talked to me about how much she liked it. She also brought up the tonal things and how it kind of threw her for a loop a little bit. But at the end of the day, she really liked the movie. And it made me realize, like, wow, this movie, I mean, it's a very, very duh comment to make. But the fact that it's on Netflix means it so many more people have seen that film than would have if it were released in theaters. Like, this woman cutting my hair, I don't think she probably would have bought a $10 ticket to go see War Machine, but it was on Netflix and it was up there on the top banner, and it was Brad Pitt and it looked interesting. She clicked on it, she watched it, and she enjoyed it. And I would love to know how many people have actually seen it, but unfortunately that'll never happen.
Yeah, which is, I think there's huge potential there, obviously. Whereas I don't know if you can put $90 million, I've actually heard it's $60 million budget, but anywhere from $60 to $90 million into a movie like this, release in the movie theaters and consider it a success.
Yeah.
Whereas you can release it on the platform Netflix and add it to their library and realize it's one of the best things that they've produced.
Yeah.
And people are going to watch it that way. So I think it's a huge success.
Yeah.
Even if it, you know, couldn't make its money back in the box office setting. So
we'd be remiss to not mention Ben Kingsley as the president of Afghanistan.
He did a great job.
He did a great job. It was hilarious.
Yeah.
Basically playing the Mandarin from Iron Man 3. So speaking of Netflix content, they don't have a lot of good original movies, right? I think War Machine's their first really good piece of original movie content. We're talking about narrative filmmaking, not documentary. Mm-hmm. But they've been pumping out series left and right. And it's been interesting because there was a consistency to the quality that made it feel like HBO. But then the volume got to the point where, like, oh, not they're going for just sheer volume instead of quality. Now, they want quality stuff. But now, you know, there's been a lot of there have been a lot of misses as well as hits in terms of the Netflix series. And so you and I ranked our favorite Netflix original content. And so I want to run through that list, unless you had anything else on War Machine you wanted to hit on.
No, not at all. I think it's definitely a movie you should check out. So go ahead and add it to your queue.
So I will say, in prep for this pod, there were a lot of Netflix original shows that I've heard great things about that I just haven't had a chance to get to. I did watch the first episode of a ton of seasons just to get a taste of it. So if people were like, how did you not have this movie on your list? You know, right. I can only say that I tried. There are movies, like, I haven't watched Orange is the New Black. That's the biggest one I would say that I haven't even attempted to watch yet, and I should. I've heard great things about it. You've seen it.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't know if I should go through the ones that aren't on my list first that I watched. I'll save that for afterwards so it doesn't totally reveal my five, right, or whatever. I actually wrote down eight. But let's do our top five, though.
Sure, let's do it.
Do you want to start us off with your five?
Yeah, so number five, I have the original series Narcos.
Okay.
Which is the Pablo Escobar series. Yeah, so I haven't watched the whole thing. I only watched the first season.
Okay, how many? Are there two seasons now? Or
I think there's two full seasons. Okay. And this is actually a recurring theme for me where I just watch season one of these shows.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I like them, I just don't end up... I have a hard time committing to a series past season one.
Narcos is one I only caught... I just watched the first episode recently because I haven't had time to catch it. And it was definitely interesting enough that I will likely finish out the season. You liked it, so number five.
Yeah, I would recommend it for you. I think that it's a movie... It's kind of up your alley. You'll find it pretty interesting. Yeah. I think that for a series, especially if you're talking 8 to 10 episodes, you can lose interest over it. But for Narcos, I think it's very compelling from first episode to last. And
great.
It's just the story of Pablo Escobar and also the DEA agent that's trying to capture him. So
awesome. I think Pablo Escobar provides an endless amount of content for films, series. Such fascinating stuff.
And Netflix has tried to play off that by doing a series about El Chapo, who is the Mexican drug lord.
Yes, I saw that.
I haven't watched that one yet, but I've heard it's not nearly as good.
Of course not. Although the story of El Chapo needs to get told.
It certainly does.
Now, I'm going to cheat like I do on my top 10 lists where I have like a tied 4 or 5.
Yeah.
But at five, I have BoJack Horseman. I throw that on there as an ode to Skyler, who famously said BoJack is better than Breaking Bad. And we have never let him live that down. It is not better than Breaking Bad. Okay, let's just get that out of the way. You also can't compare them because they couldn't be more different.
Right.
But the reason why I think Skyler says something so absurd as that is because BoJack is underappreciated. I think because a lot of people aren't talking about it. It doesn't get the love that it deserves, that in order to get people to even give it a shot, you got to say something outrageous as that. And it worked. It got me to watch it. It's a very funny show. It's very clever. They're very watchable. Will Arnett does the voice of this horse that's like this horse that it's hard to describe the whole world that's going on, but he was like a child star in this TV show and he's an actor still. Essentially, you know, it's a world of animals and humans. And it's just a really, really funny, very well written show, and so it's worth watching. But that I put that at my number five along with the documentary Get Me Roger Stone, which I had avoided watching for a while because I just didn't want to watch anything related to, you know, the campaign, the past presidential campaign, because it was just overload. But I watched it. I downloaded it onto my phone to watch for a flight, and I watched it, and I was incredibly engulfed in this, and I had no idea to the extent that Roger Stone is that influence. And the access that the directors have, who are very honest with who Roger Stone is, it made for an incredibly entertaining and interesting documentary that I think is totally worth watching. So that's my tie for number five.
Yeah, you brought up the Roger Stone thing to me. And similarly to you, I had no interest in watching it because, like you said, I was burned out on the whole thing too. Then you brought it up and I watched it at work, or actually listened to it at work while I was working.
Mm-hmm.
And it was incredible.
Yeah.
It's completely compelling, fascinating individual. He's so twisted and dark.
Yeah.
And it's something you should definitely check out if you have any interest in politics whatsoever. You need to hear the story of Roger Stone.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, your number four?
Yeah, my number four I have is the series Bloodlines.
Mm.
Yeah.
Another one.
Bloodline
singular. Yeah.
Yeah, singular.
I only watched the pilot just this past week.
Yeah, so Bloodline is another one where I watched just season one. I think I watched halfway through season two, but I haven't finished it off yet. But Bloodline is it's a dark series, really well made, interesting characters, strong writing. This is totally a series that I could I can see on a premier
like Showtime
tier channel like Showtime or HBO or Stars, like one of those. Because it totally has the feel of it, the story and the characters and the themes. Who's the cast? Is it Kyle Chandler?
Ben Mendelsohn.
Ben Mendelsohn.
Linda
Cardellini. Cardellini. Yep. Sissy Spacek. So, yeah, if you like any of those characters, you like any sort of family drama, which is like that's the essence of the show. It's all about some skeletons in this family's closet basically coming back. And the sins of their father, literally, is a theme that they talk about all the time. So, yeah, so check it out. It's really good.
That's Bloodline. Good. That's good to know. It was one of the ones I'd watched. Yeah. I mean, some of these ones where I watched the pilot only. Some of them I know I won't be revisiting. But that one was, you know, I couldn't tell whether or not this was a show I really love. But the pilot was definitely good enough for me to continue watching. Because, I mean, Ben Mendelsohn alone is so electric on camera.
Well, and we know that you love Kyle Chandler.
To coach, man.
Yes, Coach Taylor, baby.
All right, my number four is House of Cards. I watched the the third or fourth season recently, and the show is a show that hasn't always been good, and some of it can have its moments where it's pretty ridiculous, but it is just so entertaining, and I would say led by an unbelievable Robin Wright. I almost said Robin Wright Penn. Robin Wright is so good in this whole show, but especially this season, that it's as ridiculous as some of it is. To me, it's endlessly entertaining. I don't know if you're have you tried House of Cards?
I do. It's actually on my list. Okay. Should I spill it?
What's that?
Should I say where it is on my list?
Is it number one?
No, it's number two, actually. So yeah, similar to you is I found the show completely compelling. Robin Wright is incredible. Kevin Spacey does a great job. Mahershala Ali, he plays a great character. I only made it through two seasons, and those two seasons I thought were really tight, tightly written, directed. I think Fincher did the pilot, and I know he did a lot of work on season one.
He did.
So yeah, it's a really interesting. You know, they when the series came out, it would be hard to believe these type of scandals took place in Washington, and it's like the way that real life played out is much more dramatic than this series.
Yeah.
Less with hard that in mind, it's still a really good show. So
well, even stuff
out.
Like getting legislation pushed through, like America Works or whatever it is, you know, it's been interesting to see because I think those are the elements that are probably closer to reality than than pushing people in front of trains.
Right, exactly. Well, spoiler.
Well, it doesn't, you know. I know. Does it happen? I don't know.
I don't know. We'll see who was responsible. No, that's actually one of the things that Robin Wright said is it's depressing how accurate the show is to real DC as far as getting any sort of legislation passed. So
especially the fact like they just have these things on everybody, senators, congresspeople, you know, and it's just funny what you have to do to get their vote. I will say that the third season is my least favorite. So that's the one you haven't watched, but the fourth gets a lot better. I really enjoyed this past season. And so,
I'll probably jump back on. Eventually.
Yeah. So
that was my number two, your number four,
my
right?
Number four. Yeah.
Okay. So my number three is Daredevil.
Oh, okay. I had Daredevil. I made a list of. I said I guess it's seven if I have a tie at five. Daredevil was my one just below BoJack and Roger Stone. Daredevil's solid.
Daredevil's really fun. It's a really fun series. I finished season one. I'm halfway through season two. But that season one, it just came out of nowhere, and I think that's what I appreciated about it so much. Was I had zero expectations, and the series dropped, and it was really, really strong. The character Daredevil, we've seen him before in a movie, unfortunately, butchered by one of our favorites, Ben Affleck. But the TV series is really good. It's so much better than the movie. It's very entertaining. It's one of my favorite Marvel properties right now. I think it's a lot better than some of the movies that people are praising. And I wonder if that's because of the format of the series versus just a 2-hour movie. But yeah, they can explore a little bit more. They can go into a little bit more backstory. And I think that the series lends itself to a comic book. Obviously, I mean, look at how the comic book medium.
Right.
You know, so I hope to see more characters treated like Daredevil. We've already seen it with Jessica Jones and Luke Cage and Iron Fist, but I say keep them coming.
No, I don't want to ruin your list, but does Luke Cage or Jessica Jones?
They're on my queue. I haven't watched them yet.
I've watched the first two episodes of Luke Cage and the first episode of Jessica Jones.
Okay.
And both have me interested. I'll say that much.
Good. I think that's the key. Especially for a TV show, your interest has to be piqued within that very first episode, or else you're lost. So,
it is amazing that you mentioned about the effect that the bad film Daredevil can have on my desire to not watch this Netflix series, even though it's like totally not attached, other than the fact it's the same source material, kind of.
Right.
But it took an enormous number of people whose opinions I trust to tell me I needed to watch Daredevil before I finally took the plunge. But both at work and my friends a lot of people are like, have you seen Daredevil? It's really good. And I'm thinking, how? I'm not interested in a Daredevil Netflix show. But it is, like you said, it's so surprising. Very good.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. So I hope they keep it rolling.
Great. So my number three is a documentary that took a nation by storm over a Thanksgiving holiday not long ago, and that is Making a Murderer. Hashtag Stephen Avery is guilty.
Of
the so second guilty. One, but not the first one. Brendan Dassey news this past week. I love seeing this stuff. I love how we've got everyone changed their news alerts to Brendan Dassey instead of the guy from the first season of Serial.
That's the interesting thing about this. Like the way that it can shine a spotlight on these cases that no one cared about.
Yep. I mean, nobody cared about these.
No.
I mean, they're lucky that, that they get picked to have us. I mean, there's a lot of stories like this.
Exactly. There's a countless amount of them, and that's the scary part of it.
Yeah, it is.
And it's kind of unfortunate that they took the time to focus on Stephen Avery because he's clearly guilty. Because
he absolutely did it, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the first one where I'm like, they've covered the guy who actually did something bad. And amazingly was in prison for 18 years for something he didn't do. That's what's so crazy is I have a level of sympathy for having to do that. That is a tragic thing. And the fact you never got any real compensation or any type of, because that all changed when he decided to actually commit murder.
Right. And he's a terrible individual. Like he's a really bad guy.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing? A really, really bad guy happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time or whatever in terms of getting that first crime pinned on him.
Right. Well, and that's the thing. You realize, they wanted him off the street.
That's why.
So they were just going to pin anything on him, and it didn't stick. So
yeah, I realize there are probably people listening to this who don't have the history of our conversations talking about this, where both you and I absolutely believe he did it. But because the documentary, the people making the documentaries 100% have an agenda, and that's to show him as being innocent.
Right, exactly. They twisted the facts, and that's part of being a documentary filmmaker, right? You made Erasmo.
I did. Yeah, all of that was 100% inaccurate. He was total. He was super lazy. Never sculpted a thing in his life.
If anyone that's listening to this hasn't seen David's short film Erasmo, watch it because it's actually really damn good.
Oh, thanks, man.
He is too modest to say that it's really good, but it's incredibly well made.
Oh, thanks.
For a short documentary, you need to check it out, Erasmo.
Oh, I appreciate that.
And I wish that I could put that on my Netflix list.
Yeah, Netflix.
They haven't purchased the rights yet.
I tried to get them to buy it, but they're not in the market for 6-minute documentaries.
Not yet. But it's coming.
I do appreciate those kind of words, though. But with Making a Murderer, I do think Brendan Dassey shouldn't be behind bars, even though he probably did cut her hair. But I don't think he knows what's going on. I don't think he is capable mentally.
No.
So if he was involved in what was going on, and I don't know. He should be at the very least in some sort of institution, but not in prison.
Oh, and here's the problem. He's probably going to end up back in jail at some point because he's troubled. The kid's troubled. Well, he doesn't have the tools to succeed in society.
No,
as a free person,
no, he doesn't. And if his environment he grew up in wasn't enough, whatever he's been experiencing in prison these past whatever years, I mean, mm-hmm. yeah, it's not exactly a recipe for a successful life here on out.
No.
So, sorry, Brandon, but don't worry, WrestleMania still happening.
Oh, he's going to be their front row.
Vince McMahon's already got on him. I mean, yeah. Yeah, you know Vince McMahon is planning on having him there front row.
I'm hoping that he actually wrestles.
Gets him in the ring?
Yeah.
It could happen. I honestly believe he could do it. Like, I think that might happen.
Well, the best part is he's actually going to be a better wrestler than Donald Trump was.
Oh, he's terrible.
He was unbelievably bad. Go watch the video of him getting... he was up against Steve Austin,
yeah,
I think.
Stone Cold.
And he gets the Stone Cold Stunner. Cannot sell the bit for anything.
It's so bad.
Yeah.
Oh, so anyway, Making a Murderer is on my list. I'm going to be surprised if it's not on yours.
It didn't make the cut. Sorry.
It didn't make
it. Not make the cut. No.
Is that because the document that it had an angle?
It did. And once I found out about the agenda, I lost all interest in it.
Ah, man. But
this is, I'm telling you, man, I've been ruined by Errol Morris. The guy is just too pure.
He is pure. yeah, I don't care if he wants to make commercials to make money so he can do documentaries and what he wants to do. That's fine. That's pure still. That's fine.
Exactly. He's my man. So.
So you are we at your number three or your number one?
My number three was Daredevil.
Okay. So, and then your number two is House of Cards.
Yeah, so you got to go again.
Okay. So my number two I have is Master of None. So we broke from tradition here at Being a Movie Podcast. We did a whole episode on Master of None because it was that good and that cinematic because a lot of what Aziz Ansari had done was an ode to all sorts of cinema from the first episode, Italian, The Bicycle Thief, to the penultimate episode, our favorite episode, which has an incredible opening credit sequence showing the city of Manhattan in this kind of almost 70s style. And it was so cinematic that it was worth doing an episode on, which, oddly enough, we posted a video on YouTube, and that has been by far our most viewed video on our YouTube channel, our Brave Little channel, which you guys check out, Brave Little Podcast on YouTube. We have the videos of all these, or most of these. And if you subscribe to our Patreon, you get every one of these episodes in video, just about the full versions.
Full version, no edits. All the F words left in.
Yep. So. And you guys wouldn't believe how R rated this gets.
We can't put the F words on YouTube, or else they don't let us monetize.
Right.
So.
And with the California heat that both we're feeling in LA and Sacramento, it's about to get even R rated, even more R rated for other reasons.
Oh, yeah. No kidding. You're actually nude right now.
Yeah. This is a CGI'd shirt. Master of None. So it was a popular episode and video. But it's just a heck of a series. And oddly enough, you and I had watched season two without watching season one. I've since gone back and started watching season one. I haven't finished. I think I've watched the first three or four episodes. And while it's not as good as season two, it still is definitely quality. I just love the platform that Netflix has provided Aziz to tell these stories. It's incredible stuff. So Master of None.
Yeah, I've been meaning to go back and watch that season one because I love season two so much.
Yeah.
But again, it's still in my queue unwatched.
Okay.
So I'll get there eventually.
So is Master of None in your top 10?
It is not. It's not.
Is Stranger Things your number one?
And Stranger Things is my number
one. It's my number one as well.
Wow.
Kick us off.
We are Stranger Thing bros. So Stranger Things, I think it's become a phenomenon.
Yeah.
I don't have to explain what it is at this point because everybody who has Netflix has seen it at this point, I believe. But again, you know, I spoke about one of the appealing things about Daredevil was that it was unexpected. It does not get more unexpected than Stranger Things.
Oh, yeah.
This is a movie that came out of nowhere to blow everyone's expectations out of the water. It touches on so many nostalgia ticks, so many tropes of horror movies gone by, and it does service to all of them. It's an incredibly well-written show, entertaining from start to finish, great characters, great performances out of unknown actors, which is one thing that I love. When you can get a cast, especially of kids that I've never seen before, and they're just as good as the adults. It's so rare. And they did a great job with Stranger Things. I think that by far it's the best thing that Netflix has produced. So
it's an interesting thing because I don't know if Netflix knew what they had. I mean, they were obviously new enough to fund it, but they didn't use their banners up top to advertise for its release like they have with certain, like the series Glow that I see. I watched the first episode, by the way. I think that'll be the last one I watch. But
I love Alison Brie, but
yeah, Marc Maron, not so great. But it's like I didn't hear anything about Stranger Things. I didn't see a trailer. I didn't heard anything about it. It just drops this random weekend, and I get a text first. I think it was from my older brother who was asking me, "Hey, have you caught this thing, Stranger Things? I think you're gonna like this." And I was like, "Stranger Things? I'd never heard anything about it." And then I received several more messages on Slack from some coworkers, some other people that like literally that same weekend asking if I had seen Stranger Things. A lot of people thought about me in terms of this would be something I'd like, and they were not wrong. I don't know if it's like the 80s thing. I don't know if I exactly exude I love 80s era stuff, which I guess is true. But I had enough people recommending it to me in a very, very, very short period of time that I jumped on, and in 2 days I watched the whole show, completely, definitely binged. And that included me getting, I was very sick that weekend, had some food poisoning. I was like lying on my bathroom floor and holding my iPad up watching episodes.
What made you sick?
What made me sick?
Yeah.
I did a little too much sushi at a place that maybe wasn't the most high quality sushi place.
Is it the place that has the...
it's all you can eat.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's like 12 bucks, all you can eat sushi. I thought that sounded like a great idea at the time. It was not.
I was going to say, I hope it's not that place that has the Boogie Cousins roll.
The DMC roll. No, Makuni's is an institution in Sacramento. It's the best dang sushi in the whole world outside of
no
Japan.
No food poisoning there.
Yeah, don't ever try. Terrible. Guys, don't ever fall for, guys and gals that are listening, don't ever fall for the unlimited sushi trap. It was pretty bad, but thankfully Stranger Things was there to make it a lot better. It really is an incredible show. Like you said, I don't have a whole lot more to add. You really summed up my feelings as well. Incredible kid actors. I loved Winona Ryder. Even though again, like we're told that she didn't even know that she was being filmed the whole time. That was just kind of her state of being at the time. she's known to be a pretty eccentric individual and also a thief. But she's done her time. For the thievery. I actually really do like her a lot. I think she's really good in this. And I'm excited for season two.
What do we know about season two other than the little the stills that they've released? Do we know anything?
I mean, there's just little bits. I mean, it comes out in October. I've heard some quotes from writers and producers on set saying that it still is very much in the same line of like tonally, but that it gets a little bit more into the horror, a little bit scarier. Without being like full on horror, right? And they've also confirmed we are not getting Barb back. Seriously, because people keep asking, like, is she going to come back? And some people, there's such a phenomenon around Barb. I think a lot of people could relate with the friend that just gets ditched.
Ridiculous. She was just completely inconsequential character, and people just latched onto her for some reason. I don't understand.
It's not funny though, because people legitimately could relate. Like, her friend ditches her for this guy to go up and make whoopee in that room, right? While that creepy kid is taking photos of them, which is, again, people forgave that kid way too quickly. Not okay. What he did was not okay.
No consent there. That's terrible.
It's not good. And then she's just sitting by the pool, just feeling sorry for herself. And I think a lot of people could see themselves. And I'm serious. I really do think people felt bad for Barb, and the fact that she gets killed, and the city doesn't care. Her parents don't really care that she's gone, and it just made it shine even more spotlight. Like, there's Barb, the forgotten friend, the forgotten person, the forgotten child. You know, and yeah.
Okay, so that makes a little bit of sense to me, but because I just didn't get it. I didn't get
it. It wasn't some cutesy thing. I think people legitimately related with her, which is hilarious because it is an inconsequential character. It certainly was to the writers and the showrunners. Yeah. I mean, it was a throwaway. It was a body to have on the body count, you know, list. anyway, it'll be really interesting. We know the effects of the first season. And what we had the little tease at the very end of the first season of that boy in the bathroom and something came out of his nose or mouth or whatever. Mm-hmm. The effects of that kid having gone through that will be a major part of this season as well, like what those ramifications are. And so That's as much as I've read. There might be more out there, but I'm excited. I hope that the Duffy brothers are able to, you know, it's hard to be that good right out of the gate as young as they are in their careers. And so I really, really hope that they were able to kind of replicate the success in terms of the writing and the story that they were, you know, that they're able to do. A sophomore slump is what I'm nervous about. So let's hope it's
okay. It could very well happen. Now, I've heard that they're in talks to do a reboot of The Matrix, the Duffy brothers.
Are you serious?
Directed. No.
Okay, I was going to say, but don't, no way. Because if that happens, they're not going to be brothers for much longer. We know what that movie does to people.
Oh, yeah. The Matrix curse.
That's sorry. That might sound transphobic, which I want to recant if that's how it came across.
No, transphobic is when you started talking about how much you love Ace Ventura.
That's a very transphobic movie.
Yeah, you can't even say that you like that movie anymore. It's problematic.
It's got a great opening sequence though, as the UPS driver in the box. Mm-hmm. Can't do it. Ray Finke or whatever, the Miami Dolphins kicker. Can't do it.
Yeah, there's Jim Carrey in general. He's just a very mean person. So.
Oh yeah, mean spirited.
he's not a friend to the trans community.
Yeah. dude, Stranger Things. I knew you liked it. I didn't think it was going to be number one. That actually surprises me. And Master of None not being on the list is weird to me. I don't understand that.
If I like season one, then I throw it on the list. But season two is just not good enough to get it in there
for
the top five.
Really?
Yeah.
But your praise was pretty strong. Is it the Bobby Cannavale? You're still upset about the last episode?
I'm still sore about the final episode.
And we didn't actually talk about that in our episode because I hadn't watched the final episode. Mm-hmm. And the final episode gets very preachy.
Incredibly preachy, and I think that they did him a disservice.
Yeah.
So.
Well, he's a good actor, and it was an interesting character, a kind of bombastic character that didn't have to be good necessarily, but it didn't have to do what they claimed he did because it was a little too on the nose, I think.
Very much so.
And I will say, in the way that his character acted, I mean, we've already said it. That is an incredible season, and it's weird to have an outlier of an episode, the final episode, be remarkably worse than the rest of the episodes.
Oh, it's head and shoulders by far the worst episode of that season.
It's really
it left a bad taste in my mouth, and so that's what got it left off of my list. Mm.
So some of the other other shows that I haven't watched full seasons of, but I watched at least one episode, was Narcos, Bloodline. So Narcos, which I'm interested in, Bloodline, which I'm interested in, The Crown, not interested in, The OA, mm-hmm. I'm not interested after the first episode. Wet Hot American Summer, no thanks. Luke Cage, yes. Jessica Jones, yes. Glow, no. Fuller House, I won't tell you. Flaked,
I don't judge.
No.
I don't judge.
F is for Family, not really. Though I did read, it's people are loving it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you watch F is for Family?
I watched the first two episodes. First of all, I love Bill Burr.
Yeah, you're a big Bill Burr fan.
So I was hugely excited for F is for Family. I don't like cartoons. That's the number one issue I have. So I was out on the first season.
Yeah, and that's
two episodes in. Yeah. Didn't love it. But I just watched the first episode of season two, and it's hilarious.
So, okay.
It's really, really funny.
Because the pilot was really struggling. I only watched that episode. Mm-hmm. So is this kind of like Master of None? I should start at the second season.
I think you should start at season two. The first episode of season two, I was laughing out loud three or four times.
Really?
Very, very funny. So yeah.
Okay. Better than BoJack?
Way better
than
BoJack.
Did you check out BoJack?
I've watched four episodes
of
BoJack.
Oh, you
did? I don't like it.
Oh, so it's not better than Breaking Bad?
It's on par with Better Call Saul. So.
Oh, wait. You don't like Better Call Saul?
No, I'm just kidding.
I thought you liked Better Call Saul. I haven't finished this most recent season. I have three more episodes, I think. A Better Call Saul?
I haven't even started season three.
It's been really good so far.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, I think that's it. That's our list. That's a lot of content. I'd love to hear if we missed something big time. I mean, I know we didn't talk Orange is the New Black and people seem to love that, but if there's something we're missing here, tweet us, let us know. But yeah, there you go. War Machine, Netflix. Aaron, anything else?
No, I will say that I love what Netflix is doing and I fully support them. I've been a member since about 2000. 2007.
You jumped
maybe
on that service. You were the one that introduced me to Netflix. I've said that before. Oh, you told me all about it.
I take that back. I've been a member of Netflix since about 2003.
2003. So, when did they start? When did their DVD service rental start?
They started in like 2002.
I was
going
to say, you had to have been within the first year or 18 months. I mean, it had to have been. Because I'd never heard it. You told me about it, and I thought it sounded crazy. They mail you DVDs with the return slips. And you were like, well, yeah, they mail it to me, and then I burn them. And then I mailed them back.
Hey,
and I was like,
man,
brilliant.
Come on, you can't spill the beans like that on me. I could go to jail.
Oh, well, no. I mean, yeah, of course not. I mean, you wouldn't steal a car. Of course you wouldn't have burned those DVDs. It's all satire.
Do you want me to be in jail with Brandon Dassey? Stephen Avery? Stephen Avery is my bunkmate?
Dude, that would be, I would watch that TV show.
Yeah, no. So I love Netflix. Love what they're doing.
I do, too.
Do
you get nervous
Amazon
about their
Prime
power that they're having?
Oh, yeah, I hate it. I hate the fact that they're so powerful, but what are you going to do? I mean, it's a consolidation.
I think they could get so powerful, because I was thinking about this, they could get so powerful that they could get, like, live feeds into prisons. Like, if we actually wanted to have a Netflix show about Brandon Dassey right now, Netflix is getting to the point of power where that's not a crazy idea.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing that I've wondered about. When are we going to get reality shows from Netflix?
Yeah, no, it's coming.
It's definitely coming, because it's so cheap to do, and people watch it. So.
No doubt.
It'll be interesting to see how it evolves further.
All right, man. Thanks. You go get into a room that actually has a fan or some AC. I realize you don't have AC in that room right now. So.
Oh, no. This is a coffin that I'm in. So,
and
I'm in a mausoleum.
It's a little
right
bit hotter
now
where you are than where I am, but it's still, I'm sweating as well. So I'm going to go take a shower. all right. Thanks for listening, everyone. As we say, hold on to your butts.
Thank you for listening to the Brave Little Podcast. Hold on to your butts.